Hello, everyone, and welcome to the weekly edition of Trad Tasman Talk. It is 6 p.m. here in lockdown, but uncurfewed Melbourne on this 2nd of October 2020.
And it is 9 p.m. here in Auckland and the rest of New Zealand tonight. We have gone into daylight savings as of 2 a.m. Last Sunday morning. So, yes, good evening to everybody from New Zealand at the slightly later hour. We will be back at the usual time next week because Victoria will be catching up to us, assuming that they don't cancel daylight savings to cure coronavirus.
Well, even Dictator Dan thought that cancelling daylight savings was an absurd idea, even though normally he takes absurd idea up, but even that was a bit too far.
Absolutely anything to fight the Wuhan flu, but except for cancelling daylight savings, it's certainly a step too far.
Well, we don't, as I said, we don't have the curfew anymore. So you can now go for your 2 hours of allocated exercise or social interaction later in the evening if you wish to do so. Dan said that the dropping of the curfew in his announcement on Sunday had nothing to do with the pending Supreme Court case, which has been heard this week, challenging the curfew as a violation of human rights, a value that you would say that he hasn't really been fond of during this pandemic.
No, absolutely not. He rather specifically discarded any human rights. After all, who needs rights? But we need our lives. So
yes, just life, not quality of life.
Exactly. We can keep you alive, locked up in your little cell, welded into your houses, and everything will be fine. You don't need more than a bit of bread and water, 5 minutes of sunshine a day. You'll be fine.
And it's a very hot day here in Melbourne, and it's going to be another hot day tomorrow, which is very bad because people are going to be going taking up their 2 hours of allocated exercise more, which is very concerning because going outside in the sunlight, we know that's just how all viruses spread in really warm weather outside.
Absolutely. Outside is the worst place to be. You might get sick if you go outside into the sun. If you go and breathe too much fresh air that could be laced with viruses, you never know. You've got to be really careful.
Yeah, which is why also Dan has tightened the muzzle on us this week. So it's no longer a face covering mandate.
No more underwear on your face.
No. Jacinta, if she comes to Australia, will have to ditch the red undies face covering. It has to be a fitted face mask, at least 2-ply. So that...
Toilet paper.
Yes.
You're finally putting it to good use.
Although he said 3-ply is even better.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. Absolutely. Extra soft too, right?
That rules out bandanas, also scarves, and face shields as well. You can still wear a face shield, but you still have to wear a fitted face mask, I should say, underneath.
We do sadly still are officially at least in level 2 here in Auckland. We do have to wear some form of face covering on public transport. Although, again, as I've said, it's not super heavily enforced.
You don't get police officers choking
exactly.
you for not wearing a face covering.
Politely asked, even offered a mask on public transport here. But overall, things have calmed down. COVID-19 has basically disappeared from the news here in New Zealand, other than the occasional plane load of infectees from India. Everything is hardly worth reporting on.
You're still getting those isolation cases, and you're still having people escape.
And even now, infecting, was it they're taking out the trash. They dump all of the virus infected material in the trash, and then somebody goes through the trash outside and gets infected and carries on. So we're just having a little trash problem at the moment, but once we get that sorted out, we'll be fine.
Have you started testing the sewerage yet? Because that's the new phase of COVID testing here in, well, not just Victoria. They've started doing it in South Australia as well.
It'll be next, I'm sure of it. If you've started, I'm sure we'll get some updates on the state of our sewage in a week or two.
Dan, this week he was pretty adamant that masks would still be around for a long time, and he was very disparaging of the Australian journalist Rachel Baxendale, who she's been one of the few journos to ask him the tough questions, and as a result she's been cyberbullied constantly on Twitter by the I Stand With Dan cult. So she asked, why does somebody who's in regional Victoria, which now has 3 active cases, need to wear a mask when they're outside, even if they're the only person within a kilometre? And he's like, oh, what's the issue, Rachel? That's maybe sometime in the future we'll have the luxury of having that that debate. So I say that he's got a mask fetish now, it seems.
Oh, absolutely.
And in Mildura, which is in the far north of Victoria, it's going to be 35 degrees there tomorrow, but the face mask mandate is still in force. Dan Andrews has said it's an inexpensive, cost-effective way to contain the coronavirus. Well, the fine for not wearing a face mask is $200, which is the lowest fine you can get from the chief health officer's directives. Uh-huh. Even though Dan admitted that, it was his call on face masks, though they're supposedly the chief health officer's directives.
So there's still a little bit, it's a little bit annoying still in Auckland here, but other than that, there's nothing much going on. The real COVID news is actually coming from America today. I think most people in the chat will already have heard the news that broke just a few hours ago that both Donald Trump and the First Lady Melania Trump have tested positive for COVID-19, or the Chinese virus, as Trump correctly calls it. But he says they're going to make a full recovery, and I'm sure he's got the best care he can get. So.
On the 1st of October, he and Melania tested positive. October surprise.
Yeah, the script for 2020 is a little bit boring. The October, we were waiting for the October surprise, and then here it comes. I think it'll be interesting to see how this goes. Obviously the cheering leftists on Twitter are very, very happy. Obviously we don't really know what's going to happen, but I suspect he'll pull through. We know another famous world leader, the Trump of the tropics, had the China virus and managed to pull through in a couple of days.
So. Yeah, his perspective on the coronavirus, this is from 25th of August, after he'd recovered. Brazil's Bolsonaro, fat-ass journalist more likely to die of coronavirus. He advised journalists during remarks at an event with doctors on Monday that they have a lower chance of surviving a Chinese coronavirus infection because they are fat asses.
Yeah, and him being fit is obviously something Bolsonaro touts often. He had very little trouble with it. And that is something that the stats seem to show. Obviously, if you are fit and healthy, your chances of survival are 99.98, or probably even higher.
Most of the survival rates are in the sort of 90s.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you're not obese, then your survival rates go up even higher. So,
But Trump is obese, as well. Nancy Pelosi
Well, we're about to find out, all right? If he dies, it means he was obese. If he survives, it means that he's...
But Trump doesn't drink alcohol.
That's right.
This is the thing. He may like McDonald's, but he doesn't drink because his brother died from alcoholism, so he hasn't touched the drink since then. I was watching some of the 24-hour news channels. It's the middle of the night over in the US, and they're already talking about the 25th Amendment with the vice president have to take over. This is one of the most serious events in US history. And he's, as we just saw, he's not the first world leader to have the coronavirus. Obviously, Jair Bolsonaro, he recovered well.
Boris Johnson, yes. On the other hand, is the example of someone who did not. In fact, he probably had something they refer to as long COVID, as you know, he continues to suffer. But Boris Johnson is also not the fittest, not in the best shape himself, which I think it appears to be the deciding factor here. But yeah, Boris Johnson looks terrible, and he keeps saying and doing dumb stuff. You can tell he still has the virus because he's a bit glitchy still.
And also, he's become more statist as well. Somebody pointed out, it really is the Chinese Communist Party.
So when you can tell that when somebody does have the commie flu, it rewires them a little bit.
Jair Bolsonaro, he put down his recovery to hydroxychloroquine, and we know that Donald Trump has. Touted the anti-malaria drug to treat coronavirus and said back in, I think it was May, that he was taking it. So we expect him to take it in this circumstance. So even though all the leftists might be celebrating at the moment, even the Queensland Health Minister and Deputy Premier Stephen Miles, standing behind Anastasia Palaszczuk here, the man-child minister, tweeted at him, "Have you considered intravenous disinfectant?" But what if
one of their own memes that they made up?
But what if Trump makes a full recovery thanks to hydroxychloroquine? That'll be a huge backfire on their gloating now.
Absolutely. So. We're not making any predictions in 2020, but every week brings something more interesting with it. So, and of course, the questions around what happens if Trump, you know, get severely sick or, you know, even worse. You know, obviously, Vice President Mike Pence is there, and the man himself is well liked and very capable. I think the leftists are going to, they're painting themselves into a corner, and they're going to be regretting basically everything they're tweeting at the moment, which is why in a situation like this, especially if you're, on the other side of whatever is happening, is a good time to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, and certainly, obviously, we're discussing it now because it's a big... big world news story, but we're not going to be like the 24-hour news channels where they're just going to talk about it end on end. And as I mentioned, it's, what is it, round about 3 a.m. over in the U.S. At the moment. The reason Trump and Melania got tested is because one of Trump's senior advisors, Hope Hicks, 32-year-old, she tested positive. Mark Meadows, who is Trump's chief of staff, he tested negative. And this is our Premier Dan Andrews constantly tells us this is a wildly infectious virus. And yes, close contacts of positives, they do get coronavirus, but some do not as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely the case. So it's likely that in addition, some more of his staff will come down with it, but there are going to be plenty of other people who don't get it in his team and beyond that in the White House. So obviously he's going to be in quarantine with Melania. He's got Melania to take care of him. He'll spend 2 weeks in bed and he'll be back in time for the next debate. That's, I think, the most likely solution.
He's still got the COVID safe app, Twitter, where he can still communicate with the public.
Absolutely. If he does well, I'm sure we'll see the number of tweets spike in the next few days.
And he only just did a phone interview with Sean Hannity. And it's also three nights after his the first presidential debate with Joe Biden, which was moderated by Chris Wallace. There's obviously talk about could Joe Biden have been exposed if Trump was positive during that time, given that they were quite loud with each other.
Exactly. So who knows? And I don't really think it's incredibly difficult to make a prediction there. But if in a couple of days this could all be blown over, or of course it could spiral downward in the next week. Half of the half of Biden's team is down, and the Fox News staff, and on it goes. Right? You just don't know.
Did you watch the debate? I watched it because it was refreshing, non-Dan Victoria lockdown news.
I'm sure you liked it. Yeah. I did watch it. I actually skipped the New Zealand debates because New Zealand has had two leaders debates as well. Jacinda Ardern from the Labour Party, obviously, versus Judith Collins from the National Party. They were less heated, less vocal, but according to the polls, something that Judith Collins came out on top every single time. So she's a good debater. Jacinda Ardern is not, and I think in the in essentially in the same way that Trump bested Biden, we're seeing similar situation here in New Zealand, at least with the blue versus red situation.
Of course, probably the most memorable moment from the debate was when Chris Wallace, the moderator, Fox News host, even though he is employed by Fox News, he has the reputation of being a straight newsman, which I think people can translate that themselves. Asked Trump to disavow white supremacy and militia groups, and he's like, what groups? Give me a name. And then Biden said, Proud Boys. And then of course that was the line, stand back and stand by.
Yes, I did catch that as well. I thought that was a funny moment. And of course, again, Trump over the years, always disavowing white supremacy, and the headline the next day is always Trump refuses to disavow white supremacy. So I've seen just the headline today, Trump again disavowed white supremacy. So I'm sure the headlines will be that Trump is still refusing to disavow white supremacy.
Well, Biden not only didn't disavow Antifa, but questioned whether they even existed.
That's right. Antifa is just an idea, man. It's just
well, communism is just an idea. It still killed 100 million people in the last century. He was asked about the Proud Boys during his interview with Sean Hannity, and the quote is, "I've said it many times. Let me be clear again. I condemn the KKK. I condemn all white supremacists. I condemn the Proud Boys. I don't know much about the Proud Boys. Almost nothing, but I condemn that." You wonder whether
they're heartbroken. I'm sure the poor Proud Boys are heartbroken. But I agree. If you know nothing about the Proud Boys, I condemn that as well. You should know something. We're very few. I've actually met it never really was much of an organization in New Zealand, but I met a couple of the guys who were part of the Proud Boys back in like 2016, and they're very nice people. As everybody knows, probably most people won't know this, but the leader of the Proud Boys in America is a sort of Latino, African Latino,
Cuban American, Enrique Chavarria.
Enrique. There you go. The usual lies from the media, but it's always the same. So it's nothing new here.
Yeah, it just amazes me that the so-called journalists, they still spew this line that if they did their research would know is not true, that the Proud Boys are white supremacists.
But that's not what it's about. It's not about the truth, right? It's about the narrative. And, they've got an evil agenda, and anything that furthers the evil agenda is the way they go. Mm. That's it.
But it certainly set the Twitter blue check marks in a frenzy. What was it? Stephen Colbert thought it was one of the worst moments in American history. Was it Jake Tapper who said it? That CNN guy who said that one of his friend's 12-year-old daughters cried
During the debate. Well, I'm sure this it's always quite disturbing how these leftists, but basically they traumatize their children and then they sit there, you know, and then they go on Twitter and they talk about how they've managed to traumatize their children and how they've, you know, basically told them that they're living in, you know, some dark world and everything is evil and you know, they're, you know, a completely inverted picture of the world. And then and then they go and tweet about how their children cried because they lied to them.
Well, maybe the debate wasn't as cohesive as people had liked, but 780 no. people didn't yeah, die. Yeah. It didn't force people to be locked in their homes, unlike the Victorian hotel quarantine program, which this day last Friday, Dan Andrews gave his testimony to the hotel quarantine inquiry. And in it, he essentially threw his health minister, Jenny Markakos, under the bus, claiming that she was the ultimately responsible for the hotel quarantine program. So she resigned the next day, basically saying, with what he said, which I disagree with, I can't serve in his cabinet. Not only did she quit his cabinet, she's resigned from the parliament. She's an upper house member, so the party can just select a replacement for her. And the numbers have kept going down this week. Our 14-day rolling average for Metro Melbourne now is now around about 12. So we're getting to Dan's dream target of 5 daily average cases. Oh, he set a new review date for October 19th. That was going to be October 26th. So if he does open by October 19th, which would be a Monday, it'd be in time for grand final week. So we wouldn't be in lockdown Melbourne for grand final week. Not that the grand final is taking place in Melbourne. It's up in Brisbane. The hotel quarantine inquiry had wrapped up all its testimony at the end of last Friday. On Monday, in a closing submission, the council assisting who questioned Dan Andrews, Rachel Elliard, said that the failures of the hotel quarantine inquiry was responsible for all the deaths in the second wave and the 18,000 infections. Pretty scathing. And there's been a lot of discussion, could Andrews and his ministers be prosecuted under their own industrial manslaughter laws, which would see them jailed for 10 to 20 years and millions of dollars in fines, because everyone's pointed out if the Victorian government was a private company...
Exactly. Well, that's the point. They're not there. It's obviously not going to happen. It would be a nice idea, but they won't have set things up in such a way that they could actually get prosecuted under their own laws.
Oh, well, governments can always just exempt themselves from their own laws, like the Western Australian government did. Yep. That's the beautiful thing about government, to get yourself out of trouble, just pass a law to get yourself out of trouble.
Yeah, it's incredibly straightforward. Yeah. Mm.
We found out, though, despite the disastrous hotel quarantine program using private security guards, not Victoria Police or the ADF, that even though we don't have international travellers coming to Victoria anymore, we still have people in hotel quarantine coming from elsewhere in the nation. Private security is still being used there. And security contractors have been urgently stood down from a Melbourne quarantine hotel amid concerns over infection control. We're not guarding the site, Victorian Premier Dan Andrews has confirmed. Staff employed by Spotless, which is a security company, were hastily pulled from the floor of the Novotel in Southbank yesterday and replaced by police after the state government was alerted about concerns over disease control. Mr. Andrews stressed the workers were there for welfare purposes and not hotel security. I didn't know security companies also had welfare officers.
One of the things that New Zealand, or at least Auckland, did right is we got all of our police and even some military on quarantine duty and border, you know, Auckland border guarding duty. And so there are very few police left to actually enforce the various different rules of the lockdowns. So that's something I was wondering, how was Dictator Dan keeping his police state running when all of his, you know, how could he muster hundreds of policemen to go and harass people who are protesting, you know, when all of these policemen should have been busy, you know, around the borders of Melbourne and busy at the quarantine facilities. Obviously, he decided that having, you know, jackboots on the streets was a more effective use of the police.
Well, Victoria Police, their Chief Commissioner, Shane Patton, has vowed a busy weekend because Dan Andrews upped the fine for illegal private indoor and outdoor gatherings from 1,652 to 4,957. So that's consistent with the fine for breaking isolation orders and travelling into regional Victoria from Metro Melbourne.
Someone's got to pay for it, right? So,
well, and
got some way to recoup the losses here.
Especially if all those curfew fines are found to be invalid. If the curfew is found to be illegal, they'll lose all of those. Something tells me this had to do with the Afghan cluster of six households, 44 cases, even though they all weren't fined. They've discovered recently that indoor gatherings are more dangerous to outdoor gatherings, which is why they're keeping us locked up at home for 22 hours a day. You see how they're sort of discovering new things? So Shane Patton has vowed that they're going to crack down on the triple P's this weekend, which is parties, protesting and picnics. Because if you're having a picnic with more than five people from more than two households, then you'll get the $5,000 fine. And at St Kilda Beach, which seems to be basically the ultimate surveillance area, they've drawn the social distancing circles for picnickers. St Kilda, I don't know why.
That was some dystopian joke, you know, the circles.
Yeah.
I thought it was like something that they did in the crazy, well, I say crazy liberal cities in America, but I suppose Victoria is a crazy liberal city, and although liberals are different, this leftist, crazy progressive city in Australia.
Yeah, St Kilda's in the inner South Bay area of Melbourne, near Elwood, which was one of the areas of one of the anti-lockdown protests. So that's where they've deployed the drones. They've had lots of police checking cyclist IDs and that sort of thing. So St Kilda seems to be the ground zero. Well, that is where Victoria Police Headquarters is on St Kilda Road. So I guess it's not far.
Yeah, yeah. You get the most trouble from the sort of the wealthier progressive areas. You know, those people are the most uptight and love their authoritarianism the most. So I'd like to stay away from those places.
Karen from Brighton, who went viral for telling Nine News during the second stage three lockdown, she was walking the tan because she got bored of walking the same areas that she'd done all of Brighton. She's finally had enough. She's going to leave. She's going to Well, as I've said, we're sort of like East Berlin at the moment. She's found a way to get out, which is to travel to the Northern Territory, where you don't need a permitted reason to be there. You just have to isolate for 14 days. Then she's going to go to Queensland. So basically, if you remember when the first gap in the Iron Curtain happened, when Hungary tore down the Austrian border wall, the East Germans, they went to Hungary and then to Austria and then into West Germany. So she's sort of doing something like that.
And eventually back into outer Melbourne, Victoria. Yeah, yeah. What she could do, since we're opening up the Trans-Tasman travel bubble, finally, in the next 2 weeks, although it's only one way. Yeah, I suppose she couldn't quite hop over to New Zealand, but I was going to suggest that if that were to happen, she could then hop over to New South Wales and across to New Zealand and then back to what else are we getting? Make sure I get the states right. Northern Territory is
the and New South Wales, that's where. So our residents can go to New Zealand and then come back freely, not having to quarantine. But New Zealanders who go there and come back have to quarantine.
That's right. It's still difficult. Apparently, this is sort of a unilateral thing that Australia has announced, and Jacinda Ardern looks a little bit unhappy that this has happened. But basically, New Zealanders will be able to fly to Australia, so we will be able to
go to October 16th.
That's right, 2 weeks. So that's going to be just before the election day. So if the election goes south, you don't like the election results, you can just leave the country on the 17th. So there's some good news for the New Zealand audience. You can get out to New South Wales and the Northern Territory. You won't have to quarantine there, but obviously the catch is you can't come back. Jacinda has said, if you want to come back, then you will need to pay your $3,100 quarantine fee. And
expensive
you will,
holiday.
Once you've paid the quarantine fee, you have to stay there for 2 weeks as well. Mm.
So you're still going to have a mandatory hotel quarantine because Scott Morrison announced on Tuesday that he wants to go from mandatory hotel quarantine to home quarantine, which would obviously be much cheaper for return travellers. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Western Australian Premier Mark McGowan this week announced that those who are coming in to Western Australia, but you still have to be granted an entry permit, which is incredibly hard to get. You can isolate at a private residence now if you get that entry permit to WA. You don't have to go to a hotel.
Very, very good. We're seeing the return tickets are being sold for December. So it looks like the airlines are guaranteed for sort of two-way travel, at least back in December. But that does mean, for instance, if we want to, you know, if you want to go anywhere and if you're a Kiwi, you want to do some border jumping in Australia and jump between the states that have these open borders agreements, you'll have to plan to either stay for a couple of months, probably at least 2 or 3 months, or you'll have to be willing to pay your extremely expensive return ticket.
As I've previously said, National Cabinet, 7 out of the 8 states and territories have agreed open borders by Christmas, apart from Western Australia. Mark McGowan said that even though...
they've seceded.
Yeah, even though Northern Territory, South Australia and the ACT have all been COVID-free for over 2 months, he won't open the WA borders to them. His new justification is that he wants rich Western Australians to spend their holiday money in Western Australia. He doesn't want to give it to the eastern
and
states.
And that basically is the little clip in that Stuff article that you had up there with Jacinda. She's asked about this, is New Zealand's reciprocal agreement going to be there? And it's basically the same, well, we want people to spend money here, so stay put.
Which is when they're in between Victoria's first and second wave, when I think it was the winter holidays, Dan Andrews was encouraging Victorians to holiday in the state. Well, you're going to want to go to South Australia, and there have been those words that people have remembered. Oh, we wish we would have gone to South Australia during that window between the first and second wave.
It's interesting. We're going to be seeing as well the Austrian economics, the Mises Institute, whether the economic theory that trade being able to move freely across borders is good, is what generates economic prosperity. So we'll be able to put that experiment to the test on a grand scale in the next few months, I think.
We did have a few announcements today on relaxations on restrictions in other states. I'll start with Queensland, which there is a state election on October 31st. And we've been through Anastasia Palaszczuk and her chief health officer, Dr. Jeanette Young's heartless, cruel border decisions, which obviously led to the contributed to the death of an unborn baby and denied a Canberra woman the chance to be with her family for a funeral. But since the state election is coming up now, Anastasia Palaszczuk, she's talking about the path to opening up the borders and that Queensland is open for business. So she's released this new roadmap today that they're going to stage four of easing. This was from 1 a.m. on October 1st. So they've allowed a local government areas in northern New South Wales to move freely into Queensland, the declared border zone. You can now stand while you're eating and drinking at an indoor and outdoor venues with a COVID safe plan. This came into effect at 4 p.m. Today. And then it just talks about the density limits here. Increase the maximum number of attendees permitted at outdoor events with COVID safe event checklist from 500 to 1,000. Open air stadiums can go from 50 to 75% with a COVID safe plan. I'm sure that has nothing to do with the grand final being at the Gabba October 24th.
We'd never support something like that.
Then they go to stage five, which is from 1 a.m. November 1. One day after the state election, visitors and return travellers from New South Wales, all of New South Wales, can enter Queensland with a valid Queensland Border Declaration pass, which basically means that you haven't been to Victoria, without having to complete mandatory quarantine, provided community transmission is under control, including whether there have been any unlinked cases in a previous 28 days. Oh, but this is everyone's in Australia is still pursuing a suppression strategy, not elimination strategy. Mm-hmm. Jenny McCarquhart, the ex-Victorian health minister, she definitely didn't let the cat out of the bag when she talked about how Victoria was achieving elimination of the virus. She definitely just mistweeted then. She wasn't exposing a secret policy.
No, yes. The interesting thing is actually just remember Jacinda mentioned a similar thing where she said one of the reasons why the open borders plans were not being put into motion faster is because the Australia strategy was different to New Zealand's at the moment. Mm. So maybe expecting that to change.
Mm. And so the other restrictions that would able to be eased on November 1st, gatherings up to 40 people in homes and public spaces across Queensland, that's up from 30, and weddings of up to 40 people can dance at a wedding with a COVID-safe plan because it's been illegal to dance at weddings in Queensland. New South Wales, they legalised dancing at weddings last week, and in fact, Queensland, they've opened nightclubs, but there's no dancing allowed to take place. A couple of nightclubs have got massive fines for allowing dancing on the dance floor, because apparently dancing, it just, you ooze droplets when you dance, and also when you sing as well.
Absolutely.
The Footloose Town was right.
Yeah. Banning dancing. I think, I can't think of countries that do that, but it sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. Then has Jacinta had any policies on dancing?
No, we've never had even any mention of it, in particular because we've got a lot of islander communities, especially, that take singing and dancing very, very seriously. So any kind of suggestions that singing or dancing should be restricted in any way would be incredibly racist. So never suggested in New Zealand.
For most of Australia, you've only been able to dance with yourself and make your own kind of music if you get those song references. South Australia also announced today their premier from 12:01 a.m. tomorrow. Standing consumption of food and drink can resume outdoors, not indoors, as they haven't gone as far as Queensland, even though they've been virus-free for longer. Private functions with a maximum of 150 guests may have indoor, outdoor standing consumption of food and drink and dancing provided contact tracing records are kept and all the other space requirements are met. And also today, the ACT, which has also been a virus-free. From next Friday, they'll move to step 3.2 of their coronavirus recovery plan. They must have been taking a leaf out of my books, describing the... having a decimal in the set.
Yeah. I remember I was the first one to joke about the decimals here on the show, and a couple of days after I did, Jacinda announced New Zealand's first decimals, and from there it spread like a plague and infected Australia. Now you're just, you know, going wild with the decimals. Soon we're going to get second point decimals.
Well, ACT has an election on October 17th, same day as the New Zealand election, so this could be something to do with the territory election coming up. It'll allow Canberrans to hold gatherings of as many as 200 people in most indoor and outdoor venues to reach 50% of capacity. And large indoor seated venues, such as the Canberra Theatre, can have ticketed and seated events up to 50% capacity. Cinemas and movie theatres can sell up to 50% of capacity each theatre, maximum of 200 people. This is their recovery plan here as well. So there's been progress in other states and territories. We'll see. Well, the next decision day for Dan will be, what is it, Sunday, October 18th, where he'll tell us whether we will be moving to the next step three on October 19th, which would allow... Well, stay-at-home orders would be lifted, but obviously outside you'd still have to wear a face covering. Yeah. Oh, sorry, face mask, I should say. Only allowed to gather in groups outdoor of 10, and visitors to the home, you're only allowed to have one household bubble. So you're only allowed to have visitors to the home from another nominated household bubble, and only a maximum of 5 at a time from that nominated household. But hairdressers would be able to reopen, because as you can see, my hair is quite out of control.
Oh, I'm sure it'll come soon. We've got, I think we're sort of nearly getting to questions as well, but I've got to add this on here from the comments. Since we've been talking about the singing and dancing at clubs, somebody's pointed out a pub in the United Kingdom with a nice sign. I've actually put it in, sent it to you, Tim. I don't know if you can see that tweet there. If we bring it up on the screen, we'll see it. Otherwise, I'll just read it out.
I can't put it up on the screen.
Good. they had a... warning at the pub saying, you know, we'll wear a face covering, use the alcohol hand gel, maximum 6 people, no handshaking, no high-fiving, or extended eye contact with anyone on your table.
I remember Paul Joseph Watson, his summit.news website, reported on that as well.
Yeah, and so there you go. Be careful. You may... We have spoken in the past here about... the China virus being detected in people's eyes and traces of it being detected in people's eyes. So be careful if you do stare into somebody's eyes for too long, you may be spreading COVID-19. Very dangerous.
Yeah, because there's always a doctor or epidemiologist is always discovering a new possible way that the virus can be transmitted. There was one health expert who said it could be transmitted through farts, silent but deadly. though we have heard this week in the US that regardless of where the pandemic progresses, the governors of Florida and Tennessee are lifting all restrictions, including face mask mandates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it likely at least we're seeing a lot of the and this just, you know, sort of the coronavirus disappears from the news when something else important is happening, like the election here in New Zealand, or what's likely going to happen in America after the election. So November 5th, November 6th. And this is something that Trump has actually been talking about even in the debate, I think, and in his recent campaign appearances, that the states are all going to open up, you know, a day or two after the election. So it's likely will largely disappear by then. It's the story, it's the part of the plan, and you know, if it works or if it doesn't work, whatever happens, it'll be gone.
And don't you remember that Kamala Harris, she was concerned about a vaccine being found before the election because you would say feeling or vibe that it would only be approved before the election because Trump had somehow pushed it through. So yeah, vaccines are only good after the election.
That's right. Yeah. And it's partisan as well. It has to be, your political party has to be the one that discovered the vaccine, else it could be dangerous for you as well.
Mm.
So they're going to have two vaccines in America, one for Democrats and one for Republicans.
And so we are approaching the last quarter of the show. So as always, we are taking questions and super chats through Entropy. And you can also vote in the poll, which is Trump with COVID. Will he be fine with hydroxychloroquine or will he need to go to ICU like Boris Johnson? So I just put the link in the chat again, Unshackled chat again. Always putting it in the Right Minds chat. Been able to reapply now for YouTube monetization. So I just decided to hit the resubmit. They said due to delays because of COVID-19, it will take a while.
Yeah, too many of their checkers have been infected, and so they can't come and until it's all over.
Yeah, because
it seems to have really hit every single big tech company really hard at the moment, and they can't get enough people to work anymore.
They still can find the time to ban a lot of people.
Yeah, convenient, right?
Yeah. Speaking of banning cancel culture. Obviously, it broke a couple of months ago that Lauren Southern, she was now an Australian because she had married an Australian and had a son. She was announced as one of the first speakers for the second CPAC Australia, which is taking place on the US election day. But she has now been cancelled by CPAC Australia. So this was in the Age yesterday. Canadian alt-right. Gee, I haven't heard that word since 2016. That's such a... that's basically that's a blast from the past.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren Southern has been quietly punted from the speaker's list.
Alt-centrist is what it should read.
Oh, yeah, because she's an enlightened centrist now.
So yes, and that's the thing. Not obviously, having watched her video, she wasn't that particularly. She was joking about the radical centrism, but obviously, yeah, basically saying, I'm going to be less controversial now. Yeah, well, they'll make you even more controversial. They don't care.
Mm. So a Sydney Morning Herald, which is owned by Nine. Described CPAC as pretty much Woodstock for the Sky After Dark crowd. Yeah. And it said, this year's theme is Fight Back, Your Voice is Your Weapon, but it appears Southern Voice on this occasion is not wanted by CPAC.
That's a good burn.
The Institute of Public Affairs, which is Melbourne's free market think tank, they've actually done some outstanding work in opposing the Victorian police state. Gideon Rosner, Melbourne resident locked in his apartment, does his IPA with You podcast every day.
So the problem as well, we have it in New Zealand too, these libertarianism is basically dead, where they're basically ultra progressives who understand economics. That sort of seems to be the situation we're in.
Yeah. Well, Gideon Rosner, he describes himself as a hedonist, a pleasure seeker, so he's definitely not a conservative.
No, that's basically what libertarianism is. Hedonism with a slight understanding of economics.
So the Institute of Public Affairs, which sponsors the event, is believed to have been among those who raised concerns about Southern inclusion. So did a number of federal MPs scheduled to appear, and other interest groups flagged discomfort. And one source said a lot of people that support Beckham want the event to succeed thought it was inappropriate for her to be there. Southern, who is married to an Australian and has moved to Sydney, remains a contentious figure, even in conservative circles, after being snapped in a widely circulated photo making the white power hand gesture to white supremacists, including members of neo-Nazi group Anti-Podium Resistance. The photos that they're referring to was at the Melbourne and Sydney events. She posed with the local chapter of the Lads Society doing the OK hand signal. And others regard Southern's views on the Great Replacement, a conspiracy theory that warns of a white genocide, to be abhorrent and quite rightly mined. So this is obviously an opinion column Sydney Morning Herald as well. Australian Jewish Association President David Adler said he had been reviewing his position on the conference, but space restraints and Southern's removal from the lineup meant it became a non-issue. But event organizer Andrew Cooper, who's currently vice president of the Liberal Democrats Libertarian Party, said he'd been made aware of some attendees' concern, but put Southern's exit to the guest list down to space, COVID-19 event restrictions are forced.
COVID-19 has taken out Lauren Southern. How terrible. Oh, terrible. She must have made a little slip up there. You should maintain good relations and be friends with the Jewish lobby. And, I think she slipped up there because obviously they can accuse you. They can accuse her of being anti-Semitic, whatever, and you're cancelled unless you've got the right contacts.
So. You didn't actually get to meet Lauren Southern in 2018.
No,
during your
Australia
New Zealand tour.
No, we got nothing.
I did, and she is tiny. She wouldn't take up too much space. So surely, it could maybe bump one of the more, bigger speakers.
And obviously as well, anybody who's been following the story I saw today as well, that Lauren Southern's visa details have actually been leaked to a far-left group as well. So you've got some problems inside the Australian government as well with... who knows? Or at this point, you don't know exactly what's going on, but Lauren Southern has made various tweets and shown excerpts from her visa application. Clearly somebody is trying to dox her. So she's not happy with that, obviously, and it does put her and her new child in danger as well. So it's a tough time. Mm.
And she also put out a couple of days ago a statement saying that she was still supporting CPAC Australia, but obviously said her fear was for not for herself, but the other speakers, they could be next to be cut in this domino effect. She rightly points out nothing will satisfy the radicals who are holding our civilization ideologically hostage.
Exactly. And just to clear up for the chat here, people asking what she's made several documentaries, one on these South African farmers called Farmlands.
Is where she talked about white genocide, which is actually is occurring.
Or at least the possibility of it, and she interviews various people. You can watch that documentary and confirm that all for yourself. Farmlands. The other one is Borderless. That was on the European migrant crisis. Borderless, which is up on YouTube as well. And she's working on a third one called Crossfire, which is supposed to be about the Antifa BLM riots in the United States. So,
in case
of those who are interested.
Yeah, she's finished filming now, and she's going to use the time that would have been speech writing to put more effort perfecting what she describes as this monumental movie before the election. There is a petition that has been started to have Lauren Southern reinstated as a speaker at CPAC Australia. Unfortunately, it only has 9 supporters. So, but it's a collection of paying guests and ticket holders of CPAC Australia, who are angry about the conference decision to cancel Lauren Southern. We believe the conference should be a place of developing genuinely new and interesting conservative and right-leaning political thought. Though she's a centrist, she's not conservative.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's of course the interesting thing is that she's hardly that controversial, but yeah, again, it doesn't really matter if you're even slightly dangerous, if you're even slightly dangerous to the very progressive elements of the far left, you know, they'll come for you and they'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Although she has been on Sky News Australia 3 times now, she was on. Yeah. Outsiders.
Yeah, and that's obviously put her profile up a little bit higher, and that's, you know, but yeah, it's they'll put pressure where they can. It's quite interesting to watch and learn exactly what they're, you know, where they pull, where they can pull strings and where they can't.
So we've got a few questions here on Entropy. We've got a few minutes left, or they're both from. I felt that I've done most of the talking. Do you want to read the question?
I can take these questions. Well, I was going to talk a little bit more about the New Zealand election as well, and remind everybody as well that early voting starts tomorrow, and the election is 2 weeks away. We'll have some more details about the election show that we will do. The polls have not changed hugely since last week. It's still looking like, a comfortable Labour victory. That's at least what we're seeing going into early voting. So it's not too much to update there on last week. So I might as well go into this question here from Savage Nobles and Merry Peasants. In Australia and New Zealand, what political party is the most pro-Trump? I know I can speak about from the New Zealand side of this. Obviously, the New Conservative Party is probably the one where I've encountered the most pro-Trump people. I know that especially our deputy leader Elliot Ikele, big fan of Trump, and as many candidates and supporters. So that's probably the closest thing you'd find to being Trump-friendly here. Mm. I do know there's at least a few. Trump fans probably in the ACT Party, the more libertarian party, although to a far, far lesser degree. As I said earlier on the show, you're basically dealing with, you know, progressives, ultra-progressives who understand economics. So any kind of Trump affinity there is actually on the down instead of the up. So.
What about Advanced New Zealand? Do they support Trump?
I've not really seen much from there. I suspect some of their supporters do, but there's no evidence that any of their leadership has any kind of real conservative alignment, is the way I would say it. Obviously, their co-leaders are not necessarily particularly conservative. So.
And Judith Collins, even though there's no possibility, well, very slim possibility
she was actually
of
asked
Advanced
about
New Zealand. Yeah, Advanced
she was
New
asked
Zealand.
About Trump in the debates. Actually, going back to the Trump question, she was asked about Trump and kind of pushed it off to say, you know, she didn't really say anything positive or anything negative. And then later on, after the debate, she was asked, would she go into a coalition with Advanced New Zealand? To which she responded, I am not insane. So.
She should have just, in my opinion, deflected it, saying, well, that's a hypothetical I'm not going to indulge in because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And that actually was kind of her response to the follow-up question, which is, well, would you work with the New Conservatives? And she gave a similar response to what you're suggesting there, which she sort of said, it's not going to happen. Yeah. Which obviously we are polling at 2% or, you know, even higher, 2.1 and up, we hope. So who knows, if we double that in 2 weeks, we could be across the line.
Maybe she just views the New Conservative Party as mentally disturbed, not insane.
She did not say anything along those lines. We shall see. I know she is obviously very, very liberal and would not enjoy working with the New Conservatives because she has a far more progressive agenda in mind.
In Australia, probably the most pro-Trump party which has MPs is Pauline Hanson's One Nation. When Trump got elected in 2016, Pauline Hanson and Malcolm Roberts, her fellow senator from Queensland, they had a toast outside the federal parliament of Champagne to celebrate his victory. Obviously, Mark Latham, who's the New South Wales leader, also a big supporter of Trump. Although it's a relatively new party with no elected MPs, Australia One, led by Ricardo Bossi, is very pro-Trump as well. And there are also plenty of Trump supporters within the Liberal and National coalition. And obviously, Scott Morrison, our Prime Minister, has a good relationship with Trump, the pose for thumbs up. So there's definitely a lot more sort of amongst the centre-right parties, much more
absolutely
love for
right.
Trump.
And has Scott Morrison met with Trump? I know it was at
yes,
least,
yes.
With Mike.
Yeah, he got a state dinner at the White
That's
House
right.
last year,
yeah. Yeah.
Which was, so, I remember Sky News.
Good luck getting that from Jacinda.
Yeah, they flew all their correspondents over there, and Paul Murray, who is the highest rated host on Sky, got a 5-minute doorstop with Trump.
Very nice. And we are up at 10 o'clock now, so I'll wrap it up. I will read out the one extra sort of comment, not a question, from Savage Nobles as well. He did say, New Zealand National candidate loses debate to New Conservatives Elliot Ikile, and then gets sour on the live stream at the live streamer, and has a link to that, which I can't really share, but I'm sure, you know, the debates, there have been a lot of candidate debates up and down the country. I've seen some little snippets from some of them, but I know that at least I wouldn't want to go toe-to-toe with Elliot Ikile in a debate anyways. You know, I'm not surprised that he's putting up a good show.
Yep, it's going to be interesting. Well, this whole election month, with both New Zealand ACT elections on October 17th, and then the big one, November 3rd, which will be November 4th in Australia and New Zealand.
Yes. Yep.
Because it's the middle of the day, I don't think you'll be able to join.
I might end up taking the day. I've had some people invite me, asking me if I'll take the day off, so I'll see. I may do that.
Just say you have coronavirus symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I could genuinely do that. Since we're wrapping up the show, which is good, we will be back next week at the usual time, and then the week after that, we will be on the Saturday at 7 p.m. New Zealand time, and then I'm going to take a week off, go on holiday, and then we'll be back.
Because you can take a holiday. I don't know, because the next day after October 17th, we'll have another Dan D Day, the day after, whether we'll be set free by or semi-free by October 19th.
Exactly. But so I might take a week off, or make it 2 weeks or whatever, and then maybe we'll come back on the for the American elections the week after. We'll figure that out as we go. But my plan is at least to get a day or two off, and might as well make it. You know, obviously you've been very, very busy with the campaigning myself, and early voting, as I've said, starts tomorrow. So we've got two weeks left. We're in the home stretch now, and plan to relax a little bit, because it certainly has been very, very full on, having the election extended out in an extra month. So,
and at the moment, Wilmsfront is just airing once a week, Wednesday 7 p.m. Melbourne time on YouTube and DLive. But there's going to be a Saturday special tomorrow night, which I've only done once, for which was the Northern Territory election back on August 22. I'll have as my guest Anthony Kalouf, who was one of the anti-lockdown activists who was charged with incitement. He was recently featured in a Channel 7 Spotlight special about Australia's lockdown resistance. So he'll be joining me 7 p.m. Melbourne time tomorrow night. So please tune in for that. I'll obviously notify all my followers and all my social media about that. And also, Unshackled Productions to date, we've been using XSplit Broadcaster to broadcast these shows. Switching to StreamYard, which in the next week, which has become basically you'd say premier live streaming platform, just because it has much simpler graphics and being able to change scenes and everything. So making the switch for that, because obviously with XSuite you've got to build all the scenes yourself, and it's a lot of hard manual work. And if you're watching the Uncuckables, which I do the Zoom capture, if somebody's position changes on the screen, then I've got to move their name across there. There's no
Yeah,
such
we've had
issue
that
with
on
a
the
screen
show a few
card.
times as well. So who knows? Everything may be smooth next week, but it'll be good to we'll yeah switch the technology over, and we will be back for the Kiwis. We'll be back at 8 p.m. next week.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I still haven't fixed up my microphone issues. Of course, if you want to help me fix it up, you can send a donation via the theunshackled.net/donate, or sign up to be a regular member at the theunshackled.net/membership. Because certainly, I just don't want to be speaking soundly. I want to be speaking clear soundly as well.
Awesome. Do that, people, and keep an eye on rightminds.nz as well. I will be publishing an update in the next week, a court update. We've got some interesting privacy commissioner and ombudsman complaints that we can actually release. Been looking to get a court update out, but the Crown lawyers are not so keen on me letting any of their information out. So, until we get a proper court hearing, who knows when that will be. I'm actually going to do as good of an update as I can do for you next week. So hopefully we've got some explosive things and some information as to what's actually been going on these past 9 months with in the aftermath of the police raid on me. So stay tuned for that at therightminds.nz over the next couple of days.
You got your door kicked in before it was cool here in Victoria.
Yeah. Just practice run.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, and stay free, stay safe, or if you live in Melbourne.
Stay sane. That's my only bit of advice. As I said, for even though it's part of my job, for just my own mental health, I just can't watch the daily press conferences by a dictator Dan with his decrees anymore.
Oh, it's no point. You shouldn't do something more useful with your time.
Yes, which is why I've been focusing more on the US presidential debate, which will have a big impact worldwide, considering what happens during this October period. And of course, we wish President Trump and his wife Melania a speedy and swift recovery from the coronavirus.
Absolutely. We'll get Xi Jinping back eventually.
And the bats as
Good
well.
night. Good night.
Good night.